Hey, it's Craig. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Canadian History X early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. Today, I'm doing an interview with Michael Long. Now, he's a software developer out of Saskatoon, and he made a really great game called Radio General. Now, I've been playing games since about 1990. I remember typing in commands to King's Quest and Space Quest and playing games like Civilization and the original SimCity. I really like those types of games, and Radio General was actually really cool because instead of seeing exactly where your troops are, you have a map in front of you and you're listening to the radio. You're hearing what's happening in these battles that actually happened in the Second World War. And you got to move troops on this paper map and you got to listen to what's happening and figure out what to do. It's a really cool idea. It's a really cool game. I'm going to get right to the interview with Michael Long. What got you into game design?
Sure. At the university, I went to University of Saskatchewan in Saskatoon. I participated in a game jam, and that's where you make a video game over a weekend, so like 48 hours. I won a few of those, and those were super fun. So that's what got me into gaming. I previously was in computer science, so that did also make sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was that, and also my two older brothers also love video games from a young age, so that helped too.
So how'd you come up with that, with Foolish Mortals and the decision to kind of go full on with making the games like Radio General?
Starting the company wasn't anything special. I took a third year a game design course where we made a game, and we really liked one of the voice actors for it. We said Foolish Mortals in deep voice, and that was kind of a funny name. As for going full time, I made a few games part time after my bachelor's degree. They didn't get like any sales, but during my master's, I started working on Radio General because I thought it was a pretty inspired choice. So Radio General came about because I've played a lot of war games, and all of them always tout realism as one of the selling points. But whenever I looked at all of them, I say, this isn't realistic at all. This is not how a commander would view any of these battles. You aren't some omniscient eye in the sky floating around, and when you give orders, somehow your guys instantly obey them all without question. They're not robots. This just simply never would have happened in real life. So realism was definitely one part. And another part is the patriotic aspect. All of World War II games, you can always play as the Americans, the Russians, and the British. The Canadians are only ever mentioned as an afterthought in relation to the British. Excuse me. Even though we actually contributed quite a bit. For our population size, we contributed quite a large amount to the war effort. So I felt our stories definitely weren't being told, especially in Saskatoon and around Saskatchewan. We did send regiments. There are people whose grandfathers and other relatives did serve in the war. So it was about time they got some exposure.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the first thing I really noticed. Like I've been playing games like Civilization and such back in the 90s and Command and Conquer, and you can see where everybody is, you know exactly where your troops are. And so that was a big adjustment with Radio General was I kept forgetting to like move the figurines on the map to where they actually were supposed to be. So at first I was kind of confused. I'm like, wait, are they over here? But they're radioing from here. And then, okay. And just at times, like there's so much confusion of like, they're saying this and then you got other people radioing and it seems like it would be a much more, like you said, a realistic, this is how generals were dealing with it. They were listening to everything and kind of piecing it together as it happens. So just talk about, how that idea came about to make it realistic. And then the fact that you did focus on Canadian troops, because like you said, they're very often lumped in, or in games like I think Hearts of Iron, you can play as them, but you can also play as like any other country. There's not really an emphasis on being Canadian unless you really want to play as Canadian. So yeah, just how the idea to be so realistic with the game came about.
Sure. So again, I've played a lot of war games, and I also love real-time strategy games like StarCraft or Warcraft. And I'm just a small team. It's basically the game is 70% me, and then a few other contractors for other stuff that I don't do. But a big part of it was actually just how could a single person possibly make a real-time strategy game? Because it has all this art and animations and, you know, casting spells and stuff. Well, I'm not an artist. I'm a programmer, so I can't do art. So how can I make a game that is as little art as possible? Well, you don't show anything. You hide everything from the player. Just have it be one static, like 3D environment, and only change like the paper map in front of you. So that was just a more of a practical standpoint of I can't do all this art. So let's just what if you just hit everything from the player? They can't see anything. So that was a large, largely practical. As for this historical aspect, I've also had the idea of in war games, it feels like they should be showing some, like there's lots of real photos from the war, but often the video games, they like make their own images for like the loading or briefing screens. But I did know about Library and Archives Canada. I had done like a high school project involving them. So there's all thousands of all these photos that are all copyright free, all taken by the government, and even hundreds of videos, propaganda like videos taken from the war. So why haven't games used these? They're copyright free. Anybody can use them. So I thought, well, I can't do art, so let's include a bunch of real pictures as part of the art for the game and have that explain to the player what's going on. So that definitely made it more of a much more educational, gave it more of an educational bent than pretty much any other war game that I know of. Because we do include a little summary beforehand of where this region is, and then afterwards a brief postcard about what actually happened. And then we try to make the pictures and videos before and after each mission related to that area, though not always, but generally related to where you were fighting. And of course, all the battles were real battles for the Canes. We cover most of the major ones, except we do end a bit early after the Falaise Gap, ran out of time. But yeah, so, and we actually did, we're pretty excited. We actually did send a bunch of copies to our local high school system. A local history teacher expressed interest. So hopefully with students, we're, you know, teaching, being taught from home, maybe they'll get some learning experience playing Radio General for a history class about World War II or something. Hopefully that pans out.
Absolutely. Yeah. With the, like you said, the historic video and the newspaper clippings and things like that, it really adds to it rather than just, you know, generating random headlines after you've done a battle, like in some games, like going way back, like Knights of the Sky or something like that. So that was a really nice touch.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
What were some of the challenges with making the game? Like you said, with maybe the artistic part of it or things like that, what kind of took the longest or were some of the things you had to overcome?
Sure. The number one challenge is, of course, the speech recognition. So I thought that was a super cool feature. And of course, I underestimated how hard it would be. But there actually is a reason why games nowadays don't use it, even though we have phones and, you know, Cortana and Siri, we actually talk to our phones in our pocket all the time. So why aren't games using this? I mean, we did have a little bit of voice commands with Tom Clancy's End War for the Xbox 360, if you know about that. A handful of Xbox Kinect games used like a handful of voice commands. So it felt about time to revisit that and say, well, it's been like, well, almost like 10 years since End War came out. Surely we can do better than that by now. Well, it turns out it's a really hard. So we used an open source speech recognition engine, And we started with that, and we found our performance was just absolutely terrible. It didn't even get like half the words spoken. So what we did was we limited it down to create like a small subset of words that it's looking for. And then further along, we had it train on. We had, when our testers played the game, we actually record everything they said and then transcribed everything they said and then fed that into the engine to try to figure out what it is that they're actually saying. We got a performance working pretty well. If you talk like me, it works almost flawlessly. So if you're like from Canada or like Northern US, most of the US, so North American accent, I guess. If you have a British accent, oh boy, they talk differently. That's a real challenge. And unfortunately, that's like, we did advertise that point maybe a bit too much in our game. So the people who don't speak English as a first language, it's a lot harder. Mm-hmm. And also another problem was microphones. So a lot of people don't have like studio quality microphones. Often they're very cheap headsets. And so even if you have the best speech recognition in the world, if you have a crappy $10 headset, no matter how good it is, you will not get good performance out of it no matter what. But when people are playing the game, they don't hear themselves talking back, so they don't understand how bad their headset is. So of course they blame the game, like, it doesn't understand anything. But it's like, no, well, your headset's really bad. We can't do any better than this. So that was definitely a huge challenge. And like that's, if you had to pick like one thing on our Steam reviews of like people finding fault with the game, it was like, if you didn't speak English as a first language, didn't have a good microphone, the speech recognition might not be good enough to play with. It plays like your main mode. Luckily, of course, you can just use the mouse, but it definitely loses something if you aren't shouting into the microphone.
Absolutely.
Probably the second most difficult part was the emotional aspect. So I toyed around with quite a few different ideas. I really wanted to bring across the human cost of war. Because again, I feel like almost every single war game in the world misses this point. In Hearts of Iron or other games, you're like, oh yeah, you lost 2,000 guys, but you won the battle. Absolutely no problem. You'll just get some more. They're just numbers. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to show that these were real people. You're talking over to the radio. They're real people. You know, you have a job to do, but often you'll lead these people to their deaths. Good or bad, there's going to be casualties. So we wanted to bring across an emotional aspect. And we actually did acquire some letters home from soldiers who did die. And we struggled with a way to, we didn't ever find a way to like tactfully present them because those were real people. Mm-hmm. My solution was to make you, the commander, write fake letters home to fake dead soldiers. We didn't use real names for that. We just chose common Canadian names. But I feel that got the point across probably even more because how do you possibly word a letter that, you know, to a mother that their son isn't going to come home? It's very tough. And we had a few people mention they came to tears at that part because they knew someone that had happened to. So I felt that was good because we want you to feel uncomfortable. Like, we want the game to feel fun, but at points we do want you to feel uncomfortable. We want you to feel bad. We want you to say, well, could I have done better? Could we have fewer casualties? These are real people who did die. Well, at least not in the game, but at the end of the game, if you did make it to the end credits, we scroll past every single name of people we say of casualties, and that can take like 10 minutes if you don't want to skip through it. And we also want to present the emotional gut punch pretty early, partially because most people don't play like an hour or two. Most people don't play games for more than an hour or two. Often they'll set a game down and just never play it again, just because there's so many games around nowadays.
Yeah.
So we had to include something early to try to hook people in. You play that tutorial mission, you lose. And then you have to write about, well, look at these people who got killed. Oh, geez. And hopefully that engage people to play the game longer than they otherwise would.
I'd say the thing that surprised me the most was when you get through the mission and then I'm typing out these telegrams home, because I've never seen that in the game before. Like you said, whatever game it might be, like Civilization, a destroyer sinks. I don't even know how many people were on that destroyer. Doesn't matter. But with this, like, you're, even though they're fake names, you're still, these people are dead within the game because of you, and you've got to, there's consequences to your actions. So that was a really excellent touch to the game for sure. And it actually covered my next question, because I was going to mention that. With the voice acting, how did you go about that? How did you find people to do that, to get the panic and everything of battle across?
Voice acting. So on one of my previous games, I actually had done like a murder mystery kind of drama game. So we were actually, used to working with voice actors. It's not too hard to find voice actors on the internet. There's lots of websites, especially if you're willing to pay them. You'll just get hundreds of applications. So that's no problem finding voice actors. Getting across the right tone, that's tricky. We actually had several of them. Several of them were in the Canadian military. And one of them was like a radio operator. So that was cool to get some expertise from that. As for the emotional aspect, well, that was tricky. We kind of just asked, we kind of like post a few archetypes. Like we kind of had one of them be like a overzealous sergeant. One of them was supposed to be like a timid lieutenant. Not that in game you ever like saw like which guy they were playing as, because we did have to reuse, you know, those same voice actors again, because there are an absolute ton of voice lines for every single situation. We have often like 4 to 10 different voice lines for how they react to it. And also depends on if they're in forest or on hills, they have to say different things. That was a ton of work. And that, I guess that would be actually the third technical challenge of the game, was getting the voice acting to sound good. Mm-hmm. Because you can't just record a full sentence about every single situation. There'd be tens of thousands, and we just can't pay people for that much. So, you know, we had people chop up their sentences. We basically chopped up their commands, their lines into 3 or 4 parts often. And then we had to employ a bunch of tricks to try to stitch them together. And you can still tell when there are certain breaks, especially when they're giving coordinates, like moving to B4. Yeah. You can definitely tell there are some breaks.
Yeah.
But oftentimes I think we got it pretty good where you wouldn't even notice. Mm-hmm. You had to do some funny tricks. Like we increased the sound of the radio static in the background whenever we were going to switch clips. We would also decrease the volume a little bit of the previous clip and like fade in the new one a bit more. And we'd actually start playing the new one a bit ahead of time. So there was quite a bit of technical stuff going on to try to merge them. And definitely it's a big challenge. And I can see why games don't normally do that approach. So like in Warcraft, when you click on a unit, they just say their one sentence and they don't give anything about context. They just say, yeah, you know, we're ready to fight or something. Yep. So yeah, I can see why games don't do what we did. It's really hard.
How long did it take to put this all together? And can you describe the process of doing it? Like, did you have to go through Steam Greenlight and all those things to get to where you're at the point where you're selling it to people online?
Yeah, sure. So it took me about 2.5 years. About 1.5 years was part-time. I did that while I was doing my master's degree in computer science. I did that on the side. And no, we fortunately didn't have to deal with Steam Greenlight. At that point, Steam Direct was on and you just pay $100 and your game, goes on Steam. So basically part-time, everything was part-time. It was mostly me, but then I contracted out the art, the 3D modeling, the music, and of course the voice acting. I did have someone help me with the speech recognition too. But it was mostly me. I did also have a historian helping me. During that time, I read about 6 different textbooks on Canadian World War II history. So I like to research my games very thoroughly. The part-time, it was good. And then once I finished my degree, it was a year full-time. And that was a big change for sure. Switching from academia to working from home full-time, that was quite a challenge. It's a lot to manage, right? Because it's mostly me again. So oftentimes you spend all day on emails to other people trying to get your vision across, but it can be very challenging to manage other people and get them into it as well. Not sure if you want more detail on something.
No, that works. What's the response been like to the game? When did it get released officially, I guess? And what the response has been like?
It was April 9th.
Okay.
So a few months ago. The response has been pretty good. Very nice. We have very positive reviews. I had several people even call me. Somehow, I guess my phone number must be on as like the Steam technical support page or something. I got a few people calling me, thanking me about the game, and that was very gratifying. But of course, then they brought up, was like, well, you know, the Regina Rifles Company wasn't actually the Royal Regina's Company until 1945. There's definitely a few people who are nitpicking over the historical accuracy. I mean, yeah, what can you do? Yeah. And then there's a few people complaining about, well, my regiment wasn't in that game. How come it's not in? we can't have all of them. But it's been very gratifying. People thanked me for bringing the Canadian part into the fold. I also had a few older people, and this was really cool. Older veterans call me on the phone. They're like, I'm trying to start a battle, but I don't know what to click on. Guide me through how to play the game. I'm like, okay, I'll do that. And it's obvious that so a lot of these older people, of course, they've never played video games before. They aren't experienced with it. So it's very cool to see some of these older people take advantage of that. And that definitely is something we were aiming at, the historical aspect. So I'm glad to see that. As for sales, the sales were all right. We're very fortunate that we made a bit of money, but not too much. So I don't think the game will be getting a sequel anytime soon. But luckily it wasn't a loss. Unlike, I think it's something like 95% of Steam games lose money. So we did well enough. On the release day, I think we were at the top of the new and trending tab on Steam, which was quite a big deal. And I think we had about 300,000 people watching our launch stream at some point. So that was that was very good. So so because of this game, I should be able to continue game development for at least a year or two. So it's good stuff. Nice.
I guess anything next coming for the game itself? Is there any kind of expansions you want to do on it, or is it kind of, you know, that project's done and, like you said, get started onto another project?
We're still thinking about that. It's possible, but generally DLCs, unless you have a very big user base, they don't sell very much. We're still mulling the idea over, so we're unsure about that.
All right. And I guess just the last question, how can people find it? How can they get in touch with you if they are interested in knowing more about the game? Or if they, like you said, teachers who want to use it in class, which would be an excellent idea. Just in my time playing it, I think it'd be a fantastic way to teach people. So yeah, how can people find the game and find you?
Absolutely. So you can search for Radio General just in Google or in Steam, and it should pop up. You can also head over to our website of foolish-mortals if you want to see more of what I'm doing now. And if you're a teacher for some sort of school board or something, yeah, shoot me an email, and I could probably hook you up with some free copies.
I hope you enjoyed that interview, and if you did, please give a rating and review. You can reach me at craig@canadaehx.com. You can support the podcast. Go to patreon.com/canadaehx. And you can visit my website where you'll find all my podcast episodes, hundreds of articles on Canada's history. Just go to canadaehx.com. Thanks. We'll see you again next time.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
3 nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.